This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte.
The Legacy Foundation is joining with the Indiana Black Expo, as well as with the John S. and James L. Knight Foundations and the cities of East Chicago and Gary, along with the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation, to talk about and create a special fund that will help small businesses here in Lake County during the COVID pandemic. And with us to talk about it, we have Carolyn Saxton. She's the president of the Legacy Foundation. And Carolyn, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me here. I really appreciate it and having the opportunity to talk about this new initiative that we're launching.
Well, first bring up the issues. We know many of them are, of course, all related to the COVID-19 pandemic, but it's drilled home especially to hurt small businesses and, in particular, some of the ones in North Lake County. Tell us about the impact that all of this seems to be having on the businesses in Gary as well as in East Chicago.
Well, you know, communities of color have been hit particularly hard with the pandemic in general. And Gary and East Chicago have had a pretty tough time with their residents experiencing the health issues that have resulted from this pandemic. So there's kind of a double whammy, I guess you could say, that, you know, during this pandemic, a lot of the businesses were forced to close because they had, they were given directive from the governor to pretty much do that.
Yeah.
And so they had to lay off some of their staff. And then the residents themselves have had a difficult time in some of the pandemic results where, you know, they've had a higher infection rate. And so it really has created a difficulty for the businesses. So those small businesses, and we're talking those that are have between about 1 and 25 employees that have a commercial space somewhere, you know, in either one of the cities. And so they've had to lay off their staff, or they've had to close their doors. And so, as I have said, you know, what we're calling the new normal is really not a normal at all for these small businesses, and they are hanging by a thread. You know, I've talked to a couple who are doing okay, but they certainly have seen a decrease in the amount of revenue that they've been able to bring in. And, you know, they just want to be able to continue to keep their business doors open. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we have really worked on is how we might be of benefit to those local businesses. One of the things that we did early on is that through our South Shore Neighborhood Corporation, we established a fund to help not-for-profits and small businesses be able to access the PPP loans from the Small Business Association, the SBA.
Right.
And so we provided those businesses with a small grant to hire an attorney or to hire an accountant or a bookkeeper who could help them with the application, which is a little onerous, I will say. I mean, they said it was easy, but it's onerous, you know, to put together all of that information for those loans. And so as a result, we were able to help businesses. I think we had about 10 or 12 businesses that took advantage of that, and we were able to, through the work that was done in that project, saved 300 jobs and accessed close to $3 million for those businesses from, you know, the local financial institutions here in our region.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought about, okay, what is the next step that we might do to help these small businesses? And so working with some of our partners in Gary, including the Gary Chamber of Commerce and Chuck Hughes there, we were able to make a connection with the Indiana Black Expo and talk about how we might come together and create a fund for small business loans, not loans, grants.
Right.
So these are grants. These are not loans. Mm-hmm. And so the Knight Foundation has what we call a donor advised fund with Legacy Foundation. And by the way, Legacy is Lake County's community foundation. We provide grants. We provide scholarships to a number of students here in Lake County, and we provide grants to a large number of not-for-profits who are providing services for our residents. So we had conversation with the Knight Foundation and with the Indiana Black Expo about establishing a fund that would support our local businesses that are struggling during this difficult time.
Now, how did the mayors of Gary and of East Chicago help to get involved in this? They obviously kind of helped channel things along, did they not?
Well, what they have been doing is that they're really promoting this in their communities.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they certainly are very interested in seeing where this goes and how this works for their local business community. We had a get-together where we made this announcement, and although Mayor Copeland wasn't able to come, he had someone from his organization there, and then we had the mayor of Gary, Mayor Prince, who was able to come and talk about the importance of this program. So, you know, they agree that this is something that is really important. Milton Reed, who represented Mayor Copeland of East Chicago, agreed that with Mayor Prince that this is critical to these small businesses, and they come from different perspectives in some respects, because Milton talked a lot about the fact that they are a Spanish-speaking community with a lot of Latinx business owners, and Mayor Prince talked about the businesses that are owned by owners of color and in that community. And so this is really giving us the opportunity to reach out to these two communities that have had a difficult time during this pandemic, but are trying to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so this application opened last week. At this point, we haven't looked at any of the applications. We won't be doing that until we close it later in October. And I think it's the end of the first week in October when we close it. And then we will be making grants between $2,500 to $5,000 to some of those businesses that have submitted their application.
They do have to meet
certain criteria,
I should say,
and that is they do have to have a commercial space. They have to have between 1 and 25 employees. They have to have less revenue than $1 million. So we're talking, you know, really mom-and-pop shops in these communities.
I imagine that probably is going to be a big advantage for them if they are able to get the grants and be able to keep going. They may have had the help from the federal government with the PPPs. That's helped for a while. And we know that even employees are waiting to hear for more help from the federal government if necessary. But this is definitely going to be a big boost, I imagine, for many, many small businesses, in particular in Gary and in Chicago.
Right. And so we're really excited that we could partner with the Indiana Black Expo and with the Knight Foundation and the fund that they've got here at Legacy to put together a pot of, right now, $50,000. You know, our goal is to encourage others to contribute so that we can continue to grow that fund, so we can continue this program even longer.
Well, Carolyn, you're off to a good start with this particular program with the help of the Indiana Black Expo and the Knight Foundation for all of this to get small businesses in Gary and in East Chicago, if not on their feet, at least keep going. They've had some help, as we mentioned, and they need a bit more help in trying to still deal with the issues from the pandemic. You mentioned some of the application guidelines are, and you mentioned the deadline is coming up for applications in October. How can small businesses in Gary and in East Chicago, and they've gotten all the word from their city officials as well as from the Chambers of Commerce and from Black Expo, how can they be able to turn in the paperwork and be able to possibly receive one of these grants?
So they can go to our website, which is www.legacyfdn.org. Mm-hmm. So that's legacyfdn.org. And the application is online. And there is not a lot of extraneous information that needs to be attached with that. We do ask questions about, you know, their revenue, how many employees they have, where they're located, and, you know, just some general information about the organization. We're not directing how this grant is going to be used. You know, I mean, we're not saying you've got to hire an employee or you've got to put this toward, whatever it might be, food if you're a restaurant. What we're doing is saying that this is a grant that's available for you to help your business because we know how difficult it's been for you. So all they need to do is go to our website and the application is right there.
Well, Carolyn, thank you for all the great information. The best of luck on this, and thanks as well from our part for the Legacy Foundation and for the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation for helping, as along with the Indiana Black Expo, to establish this very special COVID-19 Small Business Relief Fund for businesses in Gary and in East Chicago. And if there are updates, we certainly hope we'll get them from you soon.
Great. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Carolyn Saxton is the president of the Legacy Foundation, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversations to help you forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
When Gary was a great city, there wasn't a suburbia. You know, you have people who live way out of any big city now that drive hours to get into town to work, and then they go back out. You know, it's just part of a general thing that happened all over the country. When I was a kid, it was a big, bustling city, active, many department stores downtown. You know, I think the times changed. The mill went down. People started to move out, including the businesses. The mall was built out in Merrillville, and so a lot of the businesses left downtown and went to Merrillville, and so did the customers. The U.S. Steel was the largest mill steel producing plant in the world at that time. Now it's maybe a quarter of what it was. Much like Detroit's story, you know, I think if you have a city that's like a one-trick pony, like we're all based on the activity in the mill in Detroit with the cars, well, if those industries go down, then you're in trouble. Gary's not the only place that has happened. The inner cities have been really torn apart in a lot of the country. It's not a story unto itself. You know, it's patterns all over the country, I think. One thing happened during the 60s was that the city opened up to African Americans where you could buy a house anywhere. There was a lot of redlining going on at the time, and a lot of people were scared out of their homes. One thing that I never understood was why people would flee, because if you don't flee, nobody can move in. When I grew up, African Americans were relegated to one part of the city or another. Things started to expand. There were a number of people fighting for civil rights in the area. Glen Park was basically all white, and then we had the central districts where black people were basically crammed. I remember when I was a kid, there's a park there called Gleason Park, and the park was basically divided in half. And we used one side of the park, and the whites used the other side of the park. The funny thing that I remember about that, the African-American side of the park had this great big swimming pool that we used to use. The other side of the park had a small wading pool, so none of us were dissatisfied with with that from my side of the city. There are a lot of undercover things that we suffer that nobody ever knows about. Like when I was going to Frabel, which was a predominantly black school, that had some whites and Latin Americans in the school, but we would get the books from the white schools, you know, after they had used them. You know, things like that, subtle kinds of things that nobody hears about. You know, there's all kinds of ways to have racism that don't have to be blatant.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. President Trump has committed $13 billion to Puerto Rico. He's also named a Cuban-American Latina from Miami to his short list to replace the Supreme Court Justice, jurist Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Some say, though, that the moves were to court the all-important Latino vote, which is expected to be the largest voting bloc after whites. To some Latinos, though, voting for Trump is unimaginable because of what they say is his hateful rhetoric. But to Trump's Latino supporters, they say his policies have helped the community. And Michael Puente looked into that.
Indiana has never elected a Latino to Congress. Mark Leyva hopes to be the first if he wins in November. He's a Trump supporter, and he's hoping Trump's popularity will help him in his run.
He created a strong economy. He created a lot more jobs. And most of our Hispanics have more money on their paychecks.
Leyva attended a freedom rally in Crown Point last weekend with about 300 to 400 other like-minded Republicans. He was there to promote his first congressional district candidacy. While not many Latinos attended this rally, Leyva, who is Mexican-American, says Latino support for Trump is growing here and across the country. And that appears especially true in the swing state of Florida. An NBC Marist poll this month found Latinos in Florida are evenly divided between Biden and Trump. In 2016, Democrat Hillary Clinton led Trump by a 59% to 36% margin among Latinos in the same poll.
The Latino community sees the actions that this president brought to their families, to their paychecks, to their jobs.
But then there's Trump's rhetoric. His delaying funding to Puerto Rico after devastating hurricanes in 2017, children kept in cages along the border and being separated from their families, building the wall, and threats to eliminate DACA protections for thousands of young Latino adults who were brought to this country illegally when they were children, actions that are abhorrent to Latino Democrats.
I think their initial reaction is that I'm kind of a traitor, actually. Yeah, like, what do you mean you're Republican? Like, and you support Trump? He's a racist.
Laura Vasquez, a 53-year-old Puerto Rican, says her political beliefs have cost her.
I have lost so many friends because I support Donald Trump. A lot of friction, a lot of eye rolling, a lot of snickering behind my back and not talking to me because I support Trump.
I would just warn against seeing Latino Republican support for Trump as some kind of like self-hatred, self-loathing, selling out, some sort of betrayal of your race. I just don't believe that Latino conservatives see themselves this way.
That's Gerardo Cadava, a history professor at Northwestern University who penned the book The Hispanic Republican. He says it's no surprise that Latinos vote for Republicans, and that includes Trump.
Over the past 50 years, about 30% of Latinos have voted for the Republican Party. So, you know, as a historian, I can say that's a pretty consistent pattern, and we'll see. But, you know, if I had to guess right now, I would expect that Trump will maintain his support or maybe even grow it a little bit.
But even Cadava admits it's hard to understand how Trump has managed to attract Latinos even while, at the same time, insulting them.
It's a head scratcher. It's totally a head scratcher.
In 2016, according to a Pew Research Center paper that year on national exit polls, Trump got 28% of the Latino vote. In this presidential election, according to Pew, there will be 32 million Latinos who are eligible to vote. And while news reports obsess over immigration, Cadava says for many Latino Republicans, that's not their main concern.
Immigration and the border rank comparatively low on their list of priorities compared with jobs, education, healthcare. And on those issues that they say they care more about compared with immigration, there are conservative positions like school choice, like anti-abortion and tax cuts.
Although people may say what they say about Trump, but you know what? He's the only one that actually stands for what I believe.
Nelson Velasquez is a retired police officer from West Suburban Glen Ellen. His parents arrived from Puerto Rico to the Chicago area in the late 50s. His mom was a nurse at Jackson Park Hospital, while his dad ran a bodega, a small grocery store near the hospital. Velasquez's father also ran a nightclub on the south side called Angels. Velasquez says there's a lot of rhetoric in politics, but Latinos who support Trump are more focused.
They think about their pocketbook issues, what affects their families, their property taxes, crime in the area. I am one of those individuals. And there is a slew more of Latinos who feel just like I do. That's why you have so many different Latino for Trump organizations. They're out there.
Bottom line for Velasquez, he says if whites are allowed to vote for whatever candidate they want and support causes important to them, so can Latinos.
People are tired of being shamed and who to vote for. We are not cattle. We are people. We are single-minded, thought-thinking individuals. We are not the masses. I don't need to vote for a particular person just because I'm Hispanic. Anybody who would tell me that, I look at them and I'd say, you know what? You need to dig a little deeper and be a better representative of your people.
Trump was in Miami participating in a roundtable discussion with Latino business leaders. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Michael Puente.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's time for another house to go up with Habitat for Humanity of Northwest Indiana. And the next one to go up is going to be in Gary, Indiana. And to find out more about this project, because it's a partnership, we have Dawn Michaels. She's the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity for Northwest Indiana. And she's with us from her office. And Dawn, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having us on, or me on, and talking about Habitat for Humanity of Northwest Indiana.
Well, it's always exciting to talk about Habitat for Humanity and the houses that they build in the region. There have been so many people over the recent years that have benefited from having a place to stay. They've gotten out of an apartment or they've gotten out of a substandard home. They've been able to bring their family together in something that's nice and new. And even though they may have had to put in some sweat equity to get the thing built, they still always seem to be appreciative of the fact that they have some place nice to live, someplace they can really and truly call home. And I'm sure that the next family who's going to take advantage of this, Shakira Best and her family, are certainly looking forward to be able to get into this new place. Tell us, if you will, first about the partnership that Habitat for Humanity has set up here with Spectacle Entertainment, which of course runs the Majestic Star Casino.
So we reached out to Spectacle Entertainment. One of our board members works there, and we do wall panel builds as fundraisers to help raise the money to build the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they actually paid for all of the materials for the walls at for the wall panel build and built the walls on their location for the house,
mm-hmm.
the interior and exterior.
Now, are these just basically they're rough walls, I assume, and they of course will go up on the site, and they just kind of built them indoors or at least in some open space so they could spread things out and put all the materials together to nail them all to BART?
Yep. So this is actually one of our fundraisers.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So we need a large parking lot, and the parking lot of course is cordoned off, and we have all the wood that has been pre-cut for, the closets and the entryways and the headers for the windows and everything else. And basically, it's a big puzzle. And you put the pieces together and everybody nails it. All the walls, there's a diagram and you follow the diagram and we load up the walls and deliver them to the site for the house. And then the next weekend normally is the raising of the walls.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that this goes into a neighborhood that is this is not the first house to go up in this particular neighborhood as a Habitat for Humanity project. This is a project that has going along with many others that have put up in the area. Tell us about this Field of Dreams neighborhood. How did it get started, and what are the houses out there now?
So the Field of Dreams started over 10 years ago. It is the blocks of 17th and Adams and 18th and Adams. We are finishing up our two last houses on 18th and Adams, and we will be building on the next block over. So we will be building again at 17th and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very exciting that we are continuing to expand our Field of Dreams. And it's a great community. There's a new fire station over there. There's a park. Very, very neighborly.
I understand that the whole neighborhood, that particular area, I should say, that we just described, is primarily nothing but Habitat for Humanity homes. Have there been any other houses that have been put out there, or did you all have an opportunity to take over a big expanse of land that was cleared away for the neighborhood?
So the City of Gary actually is a wonderful partner of ours, and the City of Gary actually donated these parcels of land, the entire block. All but one are all Habitat houses. So when you drive down both blocks, all of them are Habitat homes except for one. And that one is a brick home that has been there for many, many years. So we have revitalized it, and that homeowner is now living back in a community, which is great.
That's great. Tell us a little bit about Shakira Best and her family. What was their interest in wanting to be able to be involved in a Habitat for Humanity project?
I think for all of our families, I think it's so important that they're purchasing a house. It's not a giveaway. They're purchasing a house at a zero interest mortgage. So for that, they have to have a need, and they have to put in 300 sweat equity hours on whether it's their home or someone else's. And I know that you had mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they have to be willing to partner with Habitat, and be willing to put a little bit of sweat equity in there, and learn some new skills.
Now, besides the fact that you have a board member who happens to be a part of the Majestic Star Casino staff and has been involved as an executive, actually, of Spectacle Entertainment here in Northwest Indiana, what other involvement have you had with the Majestic Star Casino? Is this their first venture, or have they been involved in other similar projects in the past?
So Majestic Star Casino and Hotel, Spectacle Entertainment has mm-hmm. been very gracious and has made several donations also. To our restores for some of the hotel furniture that they have. That the hotel, of course, is now closed, and they will be building a new one. So they have been able to donate some of the items in there as well in the past, which is absolutely great because our restores also help fund a house, a Habitat home.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you mentioned that the interior and exterior walls have all been framed up, and then they're going to be going up on site very soon out there in the neighborhood in Gary, what is the next step? Would they just be closed in, a roof put on? What's the next step once the walls are actually up on site?
So our main focus for 1828 will be to get it in the dried in.
Mm-hmm.
So we will raise the walls, set trusses, get doors and windows and the roof on, all basically get it in the dry so we can work on the interior throughout the winter.
It's a very, very involved project, I understand, and certainly, as you say, besides the fact that the whoever is going to be taking over the house and the mortgage for that house being their own house, they have to put, of course, their own time and effort into this as well. Are there any other volunteer groups? And I know during the pandemic, it's probably messed everything up. Where the normal, we have a whole crew of volunteers helping out at times. Are you still able to be able to do that, only have to modify it a bit because of social distancing? Distancing at all?
We have. So, of course, at both of our restores and on our construction site, we are practicing social distancing when we can. We have masks available. We have gloves available. We are wiping down the tools on a on a daily basis. If they have their own protective eyewear, they can bring their own protective eyewear and their own gloves, or that is provided and that is sanitized as well. So we're trying our best to follow all of the guidelines that the CDC is recommending mm-hmm. in order to stop the spread of COVID.
Now, we have this one house that is going up on in another part of Adams in Gary as part of the Field of Dreams neighborhood that's set up out there. Are there any other homes either in that neighborhood or other neighborhoods here in Northwest Indiana that is on the list for work that Habitat for Humanity is planning in the future?
So currently we have two homes that we will be hopefully in the near future we will be closing on, and both of those homes, 315 Walter and right across the street, 340 Walter in Merrillville. We have a house that is being worked on right now in Lake Station in the beautiful subdivision of Riverwalk. And then we also will start a house in Lowell for a partner family as well. So that will be our fourth or fifth property in Lowell, which is really exciting.
They're going up so fast; it's maybe hard to keep track of them. You put them up on the list like the home builders have to do. It's kind of an ongoing project list as to what's in the status of each particular project, because they're all in various states of construction, aren't they? Or have maybe, as you mentioned, some of the properties have yet to go to closing, perhaps, and getting ready to be built sometime.
Yeah. So it's a very unique model because, of course, we aren't building, we're building throughout Lake County, Indiana, which, is wonderful, but there are some challenges because you have to take all the tools over to the one property and then the tools go to a different property, the next day, and they are all at different levels of construction. So we're, we have siding on in Lake Station and we'll, set the trusses and get that, get the roof framed in and everything. Whereas 340 Walter, we're installing flooring and putting in the cabinets for the kitchen. That one should be done hopefully by the end of November, which is really exciting.
I know that besides the efforts to put up permanent affordable housing here in Northwest Indiana for those families that qualify, you have to rely on the general public to help cover some of the costs for everything that is done by Habitat for Humanity. Will you spend a moment and talk a little bit about the two restores, the first one that was built on Ridge Road in Gary and then the latest one in Merrillville?
Sure. So our restores help, as I mentioned earlier, our restores help fund Habitat houses. Each one is technically you want your Habitat restore to be able to fund one home per year. So people can donate their gently used appliances and furniture. If you're going to get out you're going to Best Buy or wherever to get stainless steel, we'll take those almond refrigerators or the white refrigerators. We're always looking for appliances. We're mm-hmm. always looking for furniture. And when we sell those items, that in turn, the profit goes to build a Habitat home for a struggling working family.
Well, I know I've donated a gas range over time to a Habitat for Humanity that went into somebody's house, and it's just a case where you have it, you donate it, and the benefits are going to come back to you certainly multiple.
Absolutely. If their stove goes out or their oven goes out and they can't afford to go to an appliance store and spend $400 or $800 on a brand new appliance, we do check all of the appliances and test them to make sure that they are in working order.
Mm-hmm.
And at a fraction of the cost, we can actually get them a brand new stove or oven that is gently used but is still fully functional.
Now, getting back to Shakira Best, her family, and the house that is going up now with the help of the crew from the Majestic Star Casino, any timetable that you hope they can be able to move in sometime early next year, I assume?
Yeah, for Kyra and her family, we're hoping to have that house completed by March.
That's great to hear. Dawn Michaels is the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity in Northwest Indiana, talking about the latest house that is going up with the help of Majestic Star Casino, going up in the neighborhood of Habitat Houses in Gary called the Field of Dreams. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us in the program today. Coming up tomorrow, we will bring you an update of a report that is out following a study looking into how safe voting machines in Indiana might be. Are they possibly susceptible to being hacked into? Well, a new report that is out from IUPUI and the team in Indianapolis looked into that. We'll have more on Regionally Speaking about it tomorrow. Hope you can join us.